Welcome back to Life with the Spectrum. I'm your host, Gina Cavalli. It is Autism Awareness Month, and I kind of feel like in the month of April, we do get bombarded with reading about research studies and things like this, things that aren't just happening today. These are like decades old research studies, or, you know, months old research studies that we're finally getting answers to those questions. And I thought the best person to speak with this month would be Allison Singer, who is the co-founder and president of the Autism Science Foundation. Hi, Allison. How you doing?
I'm great, Gina. Thanks so much for inviting me to participate.
You know, with Autism Awareness Month in full swing, what is the Autism Science Foundation that you co-founded?
So the Autism Science Foundation actually just celebrated its 15th anniversary. I cannot believe it. The time has gone.
Happy birthday!
So fast. But we are a nonprofit that was founded by parents and scientists working together to try to understand the causes of autism and to develop new treatments for people with autism of all ages. And so we raise money and we use that money to fund research really across the spectrum, everything from gene discovery to biomarkers to service delivery to interventions for adults in the workplace. So we fund really all aspects of autism.
I've got to tell you, I was on MSN.com this morning, and there was like another new breakthrough in autism. And it was a study out of the University of Virginia that, and this is way above my pay grade here, but it was talking about molecular diffusion and then how water travels through the brain and then has some sort of cellular something or whatever. And it kind of lost me at that point. But these are the kinds of research programs that Autism Science Foundation funds, correct?
The science has gotten more and more technologically based as our understanding and as advancements in technology have moved forward. I mean, we have really tried to keep a pace with all of the changes in technology. And so really some of the most promising areas of autism research are now taking advantage of our huge monumental gains in technology.
When you say the different research, what are some of the biggest areas you feel you're seeing that the research is kind of going towards? I mean, with technology obviously in place, like, where are we looking?
I would have to say that the biggest change in research is this change from everyone, you know, one size fits all approach to autism treatment to really now we have moved into personalized precision medicine. And we've done this across the board. So starting from behavioral treatments to medical treatments, we've really moved to a much more personalized approach. Let me give you some examples. So when my daughter was diagnosed with autism back in the late 90s, everyone who was diagnosed with autism received applied behavior analysis therapy, of which there was one kind, discrete trial training. And that, you know, looking back, was not really appropriate given the heterogeneity and the tremendous breadth of skills, of challenges and strengths that we see in the autism community.
Right.
But now we have probably over 30, 35 different types of applied behavior analysis that are strengths-based. So they're really looking up the individual who you are trying to help, seeing what are their areas of strengths and figuring out how can we use those to build up the areas where they have more challenges. So a much more personalized approach that's really looking to focus on that particular person's area of need. And then similarly with our medically based approaches, we've, as I was saying earlier, have really started to leverage technology. We've moved into areas of gene therapy where, you know, we know that we can identify the genetic cause of autism in about 25% to 30% of people with autism. And we're moving into a situation where we're looking to correct those mutations to re-regulate the proteins that are misregulated due to a deletion or a duplication, and by using CRISPR repair and other types of gene therapy. And then similarly, we're also at the point now where we can use stem cells, skin fibroblasts, to build what's sort of called brain in a dish or organoids, where those stem cells can grow into neurons in a dish. And then we can use those models of a person, you know, this is an individual's cells, we can use those to test different types of medications much more rapidly. We can test for safety, we can test for efficacy at a much higher throughput rate than when we were relying on mouse models, rat models. You know, we relied on mice for a long time, but there's like 80 million years worth of evolution between a mouse and a human. So now, you know, we're at a much, because of the advancements in the technology, our throughput rate is much, much faster. And then we're also using new technologies for diagnosis, using different eye tracking technologies that have been developed. We can diagnose.
Yeah, that came out of the Marcus Institute.
Yeah, the FDA.
Yeah, the eye tracking.
The FDA has authorized that eye tracking tool to diagnose children as young as 16 months of age. And there's also work being done to diagnose adults to measure their social functioning using machine-based learning tools, using cameras that look at how they interact with other people. So it's not just for young children, it's for people of all age. And then I would also add, because my Fitbit is starting to buzz, but we're using wearables now for people with autism of all ages. And we're using them to predict negative behaviors so that we can prevent them from turning into bigger issues. And this is important, I would say, really across the spectrum. For people with profound autism, we can use these wearables to detect changes in their heart rate, in their skin response, in blood pressure, and then we can intervene before those changes turn into the kind of anxiety that manifests as self-injurious behaviors or aggression towards others. And similarly, with some of the higher functioning individuals with autism, for many of whom their intellectual functioning is average or above average, but they can't be in an appropriate classroom for given their intellectual functioning because of behaviors, we can use these wearables again to predict behavior and prevent outbursts so that those individuals can be in an academically appropriate classroom and really, you know, make academic gains and continue to develop their academic skills. So much is going on with regard to technology.
It sounds like it. And with me today, Allison Singer, the co-founder and president of the Autism Science Foundation. When we get back, we're going to find out how sharing is caring. Stay with me. Welcome back to Life with the Spectrum. I'm your host, Gina Cavalli. With me today, Allison Singer. She is the co-founder and president of the Autism Science Foundation. And I know you have a lot of things going on there with different research programs. How do you get the research out to the masses? Is this something, for example, I've had a lot of parents ask me, Allison, how can I sign my child up? How can I sign my young adult up? Are these the research programs that you're doing or no? This is kind of a different avenue.
No, our mission at the Autism Science Foundation, we sum it up in three words: searching, solving, sharing. So in addition to funding research, we also make sure that the output of research, what we've learned, is put into the hands of the people who need to hear it. So into the hands of parents, into the hands of special education teachers, into the hands of therapists, so that when we discover something that could benefit individuals with autism, it's not just published in an academic journal. It's actually put out into practice. So we do that a lot of ways. We do those through our Days of Learning, which we hold several times a year, and the videos are available
on demand
on our website. We do it through our weekly podcast, where our chief science officer, Dr. Alicia Halliday, I like to say translates the science into English. She reports on all of the autism publications that came out that week and talks about, really makes them accessible to families so that they are then able to discuss them with their child's teacher or therapist, with their clinicians. And then we are also involved in encouraging all of our families to participate in research studies. So we recently launched something on a new area of our website called the Participate in Research Database. And there have been lots of research match programs where the scientists get lists of families. But this one is different because in this case, because we are a family-focused organization. We have invited scientists to send us the studies that they are trying to fill with participants. Oh. And we allow families to sort through them and look for studies that are of interest to them.
Makes sense for their family, their child.
Exactly.
Every child is so very different. Let me ask you another thing with the siblings and getting them involved. It can be very difficult for any diagnoses, really, when you have a sibling that's neurotypical and living life, and then you have another child in the family that needs more support. Does the Autism Science Foundation have anything about where they can help siblings and parents on how to best cope with their other child and children to explain things?
We're very much focused on the experience of the whole family, including siblings. You know, for so long we referred to siblings as unaffected siblings, but they're anything but unaffected. They are very much affected by the fact that their family is probably extraordinarily dominated by autism, with therapists coming in and out of their house and a good proportion of the family's resources being devoted to the sibling with autism. So in addition to funding research about the experience of siblings, we also have support for siblings in terms of our SAM SIB Stick Together program, which is a support group that meets monthly with a social worker who can provide mental health support to siblings. And I'll tell you, these siblings raise all kinds of questions. They talk about guardianship. They talk about all kinds of
responsibility at the end of the day. Yeah. And the effect and toll it takes on their relationships.
And because autism is a genetic disorder, many of them express concerns about their own family planning. You know, if they have a sibling with autism, does that mean that they're at increased risk of having a child with autism? And the answer is yes. But there are things that we can do to provide support to those siblings, provide them with as much information for family planning as we can through research. And at the Autism Science Foundation, we have invested in that research, and we have good information now for siblings. And we would encourage them to come to our website. There are a lot of resources for siblings.
With me today, Allison Singer, the co-founder and president of the Autism Science Foundation. When we get back, we're going to do a little check-in to see where her daughter's at. Stay with me. Welcome back to Life with the Spectrum. I'm your host, Gina Cavalli. With me today, Allison Singer, the co-founder and president of the Autism Science Foundation. It has been like eye-opening, everything that you do there. I would be remiss not to ask about your daughter. Where is she today? What is she doing? What does her future look like?
So my daughter's now 26 years old.
Woo!
She's diagnosed. I know, I can hardly believe it. She's diagnosed with profound autism, which is a new diagnosis that was first published in The Lancet in 2021. But individuals with profound autism have IQ under 50. They're either nonverbal or minimally verbal, and they require 24/7 supervision in order to maintain their safety.
Right.
So my daughter lives in a wonderful, intentional community in the Catskills called the Center for Discovery. And there she has turned her lifelong love of animals into a vocation. They raise animals. It's a working farm. They grow crops. They have a restaurant on the campus to which the entire community is invited. And let me tell you, that is the best salad bar I've ever
had. Farm to
they
table.
In the same morning, they from the farm and
to the table. It's the best
for lunch. They pick it at breakfast and serve it at lunch. But it's just a wonderful community. She's very active in the community. She takes yoga and Zumba at the community center, and she was taking a painting class at community college. So she is really in a great place. I wish that everyone who wanted to be in an intentional community could be, but unfortunately, there are not enough places for adults with profound autism.
They are popping up. The more awareness that gets out there on profound autism, which, you know, they just started the Profound Alliance. The Profound Autism Alliance. I'm very excited about that. And the future looks bright for that organization, because there are a lot of profound kids. And we would be remiss not to address that too, because like I have a very high functioning son, and we go to a high functioning school for all children with autism spectrum disorder. But we forget that there are parents that have to have 24-hour supervision, that their lives and livelihoods look completely different than the landscape of someone who is less profound. So I think it's great that these communities are popping up, that the Profound Alliance has popped up, and that we're really making big strides for those individuals, too.
I think in 2013, when the five different subtypes of autism were all collapsed into the single diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder, what happened was that the people who have the greatest level of need were left behind. You know, we know from the Centers for Disease Control that 27% of people with autism spectrum disorder meet the criteria for profound autism, but they have really been left behind. Only 6% of people with profound autism are involved in autism research. Mm. There are not nearly enough schools or residential placements for people who need 24/7 supervision. Over the last decade, so much of the resource has gone into services and systems for much higher functioning individuals. They are the ones who you see on television. They are the ones about whom documentaries are made. They are the ones who, because they can speak, are the ones who participate in policy making committees at the federal and state level. And unfortunately, in many cases, they have not advocated for people with profound autism. So it's critical that we re-bifurcate the diagnoses and go back to a separate definition for profound autism. And as you said, the Profound Autism Alliance, which we are so proud to partner with, they recently had their very first conference, and over 530 people from 35 states came to Boston because there's so much need in this population. So I think more and more the spotlight is going to have to shine on people with profound autism.
And really quick, while we're here talking about that, you had mentioned 6% of people with profound autism take part in research programs, and they can find these programs on your website. How do people get in touch with you?
If they go to our website at autismsciencefoundation.org, they can go to our Participate in Research database, and they can search based on different criteria, their region, whether they want online or in person, the type of research that they're interested in. But it's the first database that allows individuals with autism themselves and parents to comb through the research studies that are being conducted and choose what makes sense for them.
Allison, thank you so much for being on the show. What a world of information, and what a great force for good you and the foundation are doing there.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me today.
I mean, wow. Allison and her folks at the Autism Science Foundation, they get it. They understand. And they share the information. And I think the best takeaway was those research programs that you and your family can take part of, but at your leisure. If you want to go online and look and see if something's happening in the area, is it virtual, is it online? I mean, that's just amazing. Because before, you used to have to travel to Duke, or you used to have to travel to Boston and get poked and prodded and all these things. Not anymore. So definitely look for the Autism Science Foundation online and think about possibly joining one of their research studies. That'd be amazing. Thank you again so much for coming back week after week, sharing in the love of, you know, what it's like to live with autism spectrum disorder. The whole month of April, we light it up blue, but for families who live life with the spectrum, we light it up year round, right? So we get it. And I appreciate you checking out the show. Remember to like, comment, most of all, subscribe to the channel. And if there's somebody I need to be talking to in your community, please send me an email, put the comment below of who that is, and I'll reach out to them to see if we can book them on a future episode of Life with the Spectrum. Till next time. See ya.